You are Locked On Raiders, your daily Oakland Raiders podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Just win.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. His face is weather-beaten. He wears a hooded sash, with a silver hat about his head, and a bristling black mustache. He growls as he storms the country, a villain big and bold. And the trees all shake and quiver and quake as he robs them of their gold. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
What's up, Raider Nation? Welcome into another episode of the Locked On Raiders podcast. I'm your boy Q, at your boy Q254 on Twitter, and it is Friday, February 1st, 2019, 2 days away from the big game, Super Bowl 53, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Atlanta, Georgia, and that's where I've been for the last week covering the Super Bowl. And before we get into today's episode, I want to apologize for not having a Thursday episode. I'll tell you right now, it's been a very long week here in Atlanta, and it's been a fun week, but a very long, hectic week. And Thursday, I just wasn't able to get it done. Had to get to bed a little bit earlier on Wednesday night than usual. And I actually had to sleep in a little bit longer than I usually do on Thursday morning. And by sleeping in, I mean I got up at 6:30 instead of like 4:45 a.m. that is. Yeah, so it's crazy, man. It's been a long week. But either way, it is all good. We're here for a Friday episode, and we're going to finish this week off with a bang. And please believe, I think you're going to enjoy today's episode, because coming up on it, I have Raider legend, Hall of Famer, Touchdown Timmy. That's right, Tim Brown, Pro Football Hall of Fame member, obviously Heisman Trophy winner at Notre Dame, Raider great, Raider legend, Touchdown Tim Brown is going to be on the show today. Myself and my co-host Craig Smoke from Unnecessary Roughness on ESPN Central Texas. We do our show there daily from noon to 3. As soon as we walked in to the convention center where all the Radio Row is going in on Thursday, first person we see is Tim Brown. And I just said, hey, you know what the heck? So I hollered at his handlers and said, hey, man, are you running Tim? They said, yep. I said, hey, does he have any availability? Yeah, well, actually, you know, we got an appointment right now, and then we got an appointment a little bit from now, but I got some time in the middle. When would you be ready to record them? Right now. I said right now. So myself and Craig Smoke, we're able to do that, and you will hear that interview in its entirety. Normally, I would just say, I'll just throw in, you know, a little bit about, you know, the Raiders, like I did with Romanowski earlier in the week. I believe that was Tuesday's episode, but this Tim Brown interview was really, really good. It's about 20 minutes long, so you're going to hear the whole thing in segment number 2 today on the Locked On Raiders podcast. In the rest of segment number 1, I'm going to hit you with some phone calls from the Locked On Raiders podcast voicemail line. I'm also going to have more calls in segment number 3, and then Touchdown Tim Brown, about 20 good minutes with him. That'll be in segment number 2. That's how we'll finish off the week live from Atlanta, Georgia, site of Super Bowl 53. So pretty excited about that, man. Been having a lot of fun. I did want to tell you and give you a little bit of credit. I told you before on the podcast about the reports that we always get from the higher ups, the powers that be here on the Locked On Raiders podcast and the Locked On Network, and they kind of give us an update on what's going on and how many downloads your show is getting, and you know what I'm saying, stuff like that, all those numbers type thing, all the analytics. And I'm really not the analytic guy, but whatever, it's all good. Just wanted to let you know, because this is all about what you are doing. Locked On Raiders podcast was the 4th highest, not rated, but highest growth number. So it was up about 18% from December. So I think that's pretty cool. We've been having a lot of fun on the off season, during the off season, and had a lot of good conversations and a lot of good podcasts. So just wanted to give you a lot of credit for everything you do as far as downloading and listening to the podcast and interacting with the podcast, because anytime there's growth, it's not about me, it's about you. And I really appreciate that. So with that being said, let's get into some calls off that Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line. Let's start things off with Kurt from Northern Cali. He's calling to talk about Derek Carr and Kyler Murray, that whole situation surrounding the draft, what the options may be. Here's Kurt.
Hey, what up, Q? This is Kurt from Northern California. Just want to touch base with this whole Derek Carr and Kyler Murray situation. I'm a big Derek Carr fan. Super awesome guy, but, you know, frustrated a lot of times too. But, you know, I was thinking if we needed a quarterback, you know, in the middle of the season, if Derek Carr got hurt, might be good to have, you know, Kyler Murray or something. It might be good to pick him up in the draft, but I don't know if it's a good thing to pick him up first thing, but he probably won't be there that long. I don't know what next year draft brings, but if there's no options and we need a quarterback, it might be good just to stash Kyler Murray for the long run. And if someone needs him and we could do a trade for him, if Derek Carr turns out to be good, you know, I think that would be awesome. But, you know, it might be good just to have him. But just want to say, you know, appreciate the show. It's awesome. Keeps me going every day. Really look forward to listening to it every day and hearing everyone's feedback. Let's go. And always, let's win. Do it.
Good stuff right there from my man Kurt from Northern Cali. Appreciate that call. Brother Marquise in the 305 repping Miami one time. The Super Bowl is going to be in Miami next year. Brother Marquise is going to get ready. Anyway, he's not calling about the Super Bowl. He's not calling about plans for South Beach next season. He's talking about three guys he hates the most. Who's the biggest Raider haters? You know, this is a response to Vader Raiders call, but he also puts his own little twist on things. Here's my man Brother Marquise in the 305 repping Miami one time.
Raider Nation, give me a call. To answer my man Vader Raiders' question about the people you hate the most, and I'm going to do a little spin on it. I'm going to answer your question, and then I'm going to take it a little bit further. Three guys I hate the most is one, and number three, Chris Mortensen. I don't even know why we don't like Chris Mortensen, but Al Davis didn't like Chris Mortensen, and he's family, so when your family don't like somebody, I don't like nobody. So Chris Mortensen on my list. Two, obviously Lane Kiffin for obvious reasons. Forget Crane, Lane Kiffin. And number one is obviously Mike Shanahan, like you said. But I'm going to take another spin on it. When you first talk about people I hate most as the Raiders, my first thought was not people from the outside, but people that killed me from the inside. So I'm going to start with number three. Number three, Stuart Swiger. Boy, Stuart Swiger used to drive me crazy. He used to always mess up plays, miss tackles. Boy, drove me crazy. Boy, whoo, glad to get that off my chest. Two, Rolando McClain. Boy, just out there shooting, popping, you know, shooting guys, just a pain in the butt, wasted pick. And number one, who could it be? No one other than Mr. Purple Drank himself, Mr. Jamarcus Russell. All three of those guys hurt the Raiders more than all the other guys on the outside. So those are the players and people I hate the most. Brother Marquise, out.
All right, good stuff right there. Always good to hear from you, my man. And now Raider Jim, he's in the Pacific Northwest. He's calling about some of the Raider haters, just a few of them. He's also calling about free agency in the draft and the whole Bill Romanowski situation with comments about Carr not being tough enough. And I will say, Bill Romanowski's name is going to come up quite a bit on today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Here's my man, Raider Jim in Pacific Northwest.
Q, it's Raider Jim from the Pacific Northwest in the 206. Calling you and the Raider Nation. Shout out to all the Raider Nation. And shout out especially to Al out in Georgia. Way to go, Al. You're one of my favorites, buddy. Q, there are a lot of things that come up. First of all, as far as, you know, some of the Raider haters out there and such, the ones that come to my mind especially are Teddy Bruschi. He's an idiot, complete idiot, and he has such a huge platform on ESPN. And it's hard for me to say that because I'm Italian, and so is he. But you know what? The guy just totally rags on the Raiders day in, day out. He always votes for the other team when they're matching him up and stuff. Another one that comes to mind for me is Randy Moss. He doesn't even acknowledge the fact that he played for the Raiders and that we resuscitated his career. And then he made a half-assed effort on the field most of the time when he played for the Silver and Black. Another one that comes to my mind is a guy named Dave Wyman. He's an old linebacker. I think he first started out playing for the Denver Broncos, and then he ended his career with the Seattle Seahawks, and he's now the color guy for the Seahawks up here. He's got a radio station up here. He's constantly ragging on the silver and black for no good reason. The fact that, you know, he was an opponent of theirs, not only with the Broncos, but with the Seahawks. So those are three knuckleheads that come to my mind on that issue. The other thing that I've noticed, Q, is that, look, I think we need to be rational about free agency and the draft. Free agency, I don't think that they're going to be making big splashes in free agency. I really don't. I think they're going to be out and they're going to go out there and get some folks that deserve the money, but that are also Gruden grinders, and they're going to be tough. The other issue I wanted to talk about real quick here is this whole thing with Bill Romanowski and the so-called lack of toughness when it comes to Derek Carr. You know what? What a bunch of poppycock, frankly. I like Romo. Okay, he's part of the silver and black clan. But you know what? Can we quit being biased about Derek Carr and his personality? No, he's not Rich Gannon. He's not supposed to be Rich Gannon. He's Derek Carr. And you know what? I think we're biased against the fact that he's a nice guy. And he doesn't really want to get in people's faces. That's just his method. But you know what? He does the job on the field. And I think that, you know what? People just need to loosen up. I think Gruden really likes him. Have you seen Gruden's demeanor with him on the sidelines? It's congenial. It's supportive. It's instructional. He's doing a great job coaching the kid. So, you know what? I think Derek Carr stays. And quit getting out of your – I'm just upset about it. Okay, boy Q, you've heard enough from me. Raider Nation, all day, every day.
All right, great stuff right there from Raider Jim in Pacific Northwest. Definitely appreciate that call. I like his little point of view right there. Brother Marquise in the 305 Miami, appreciate you. And Kurt from Northern Cali, definitely appreciate you. Coming up next, segment number two, touchdown Tim Brown. Raiders great wide receiver Tim Brown, myself, Craig Smoke. You're going to hear that next on the Locked On Raiders podcast.
You are Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Oakland Raiders. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team. Every day.
Welcome back, Raider Nation, to the Locked On Raiders podcast. I'm your boy Q. You can always find me on Twitter at your boy Q254. And you know that Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line is always wide open like some TV antennas, 707-654-4693. But you're not going to hear any calls in this segment. In this segment, you're going to hear from Raider great, Raider legend, Tim Brown, Pro Football Hall of Famer. That's right. This is a banger right here. And you're going to hear Craig Smoke and myself. We co-host a show together on ESPN Central Texas, Unnecessary Roughness. I'm going to play the whole interview for you because I think it's really, really good. It's about 20 minutes long, and I don't think Raider Nation will mind hearing Tim Brown for about 20 minutes. So here's Tim Brown, Craig Smoke, and myself from Thursday on ESPN Central Texas.
What a pleasure to have a Pro Football Hall of Famer, a fellow Texan, and and somebody who knows the campus of Baylor a little bit as well, his son, a Baylor graduate. The legendary Tim Brown sitting with us here on Radio Row. Tim, how you doing today?
I'm good, good. Thank you, guys. Appreciate the time.
Well, I've already probably got my talking in.
Yeah, you're We've done. Got, that's all you needed. You're done.
Show him your backpack, Q.
Oh, no, I don't have the backpack with me, but I just, took my beanie off. I got my wallet. I can't take my jacket off and show him my tattoo because it's too cold still.
Yes.
I haven't thawed out yet, but you're done for the day.
Yeah, I'm done. So, Tim, it was nice talking
Thank
to you,
you
man.
Thank you, brother. Yeah. I appreciate you. Good intro.
No, I've seen you around Super Bowls before, but here in Atlanta, how have you been enjoying the week, and how's life treating you?
It's been good, man. It's been good. You know, I've been here since Tuesday, so but a little slow. Had some other business I had to do, but not that much football stuff. But it's going to pick up here. I know it's going to get a little crazy. So I was staying out in Marietta, which is about 30 miles out of here. But now I'm coming to the hotel to stay at the Omni for the next 4 nights. So it's going to be a little wild.
How crazy is it just how much is this whole area, everything has just grown? Yeah. As far as, you know, Radio Row, the whole coverage of the Super Bowl. I mean, just every single year, bigger.
Yeah. Except last year, you know, they put Radio Row in the mall or something last year in Minnesota. It was pretty tough. But, this game is, it just shows you how impactful this game still is on not just, you know, the United States, but the world. You have people from all over the world who are here, and it's really a beautiful thing to see the game keep growing the way it's growing.
Are you someone who suffers from Patriots fatigue, or do you appreciate – I guess you can suffer from the fatigue and still appreciate it.
Yeah.
Is that where you are as far as the Patriots
no
go?
Doubt. No, I mean, I don't think anyone thought they would be here this year. I mean, you know, after they lost to Detroit and a couple, you know, lackluster performances, you're thinking, oh, okay, well, they'll make the playoffs because they're in the worst division in football, I think. But at the same time, you didn't think they were a strong enough football team. When Josh Gordon left, you think, oh, well, you know. But it's really amazing to see, you know, how these guys play football. They have the ability to dictate a game to the point where it puts the other team in such a position, especially this year. You play a Kansas City team that's used to throwing the ball up the field, scoring all these points, and all of a sudden they're in a game where it's a very close game, and everybody gets a little tighter in those situations. So how do you go against these guys at this point? I mean, everybody's like, oh, the Patriots are going to win. What do you see that I'm not seeing?
Right.
Because, you know, I know this Rams team is talented, but, man, you know Belichick is going to have an answer for him, and it'll be very interesting to see what they do.
Speaking of Patriot fatigue, do you start to cringe every time the game, the Tuck Rule game, comes up? It was the 17th anniversary a couple weeks ago, Saturday. I know I cringe.
Right.
I can only imagine you who were there on the scene.
Right. Well, you know, when the game happened with the Saints –
right.
Before the ball hit the ground, I was thinking, oh, here we go. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to start making a comparison.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the interviews are going to be coming, and, you know, because you if you're a Raider fan, you'll never stop talking about it.
Ever.
Because it's that big of a play to you. But I was telling somebody earlier, man, I mean, every time I think about it, it's like that punch in the gut, you know, because it's just one of those moments, man, that may have changed your flight a little bit as far as, you know, winning the championship. So it's hard to digest, but, you know, at some point, I guess, you know, you will be able to get over it. But I don't know when that point is going to be at this.
What would you tell the Saints? What would you tell the Saints right now? Because you've been in a similar situation.
Hey.
I would never compare it to be the same situation.
Right.
But what would you tell the Saints in that situation?
You know, it is what it is, man.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about it, you know. I mean, guess what? 17 years from now, you're going to be talking about it there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the reality of the whole situation. And they have to understand that. Now, look, I will say this. If we'd have won that game versus the Patriots, we had to go to Pittsburgh and beat the Steelers. So there's not a 100% chance that we would have, you know, gone to the – for them, that play probably cost them from coming, you know. So I get that
it's
really tough. But at the same time, man, you can't blame the officials. You know, you can't blame – I mean, you go back and look at the game like we always do after you lost. There was probably 20 plays in the game that if they go a different way, then you're not in that situation. So so from that standpoint, you know, it is what it is, man. Move on as much as you can and just get ready for Drew Brees when he's 58 years old still talking about what happened. You know what
right.
I mean? So,
as somebody who had a long NFL career, how much appreciation – I'm talking a lot about appreciation today, but how much of an appreciation do you have for Tom Brady being at his age and playing at still such a high level?
It's amazing. Not from a physical point of view, because physically you do what your mind tells you to do. But for him to mentally stay in this thing the way he is and to be so sharp and to keep forcing his body to go out and do what he has to do, more so in the off season than probably in the season, because once you get into the flow of a season, it's not easy, but, you know, it is what you do. But for him to be so mentally sharp at this stage of life, I don't know how he's doing it. I mean, no quarterback has ever been able to do it. So, you know, maybe he has a secret sauce that nobody knows about. But it's really remarkable. Because I know for me, you know, the first time I thought about, maybe it's time. I was in the middle of a game.
Wow.
Really? I was in the middle of a game. And I said, I don't know if this game is from – we were playing – it was my last year in Tampa. We're playing the Redskins.
Well, that explains it all.
right. And the great late Sean Taylor, man. I ran a route, and he came jogging up to me on my way back to the huddle and said to me, Tim Brown, it's an honor to play Bill in the Field with you. And literally, I was looking up to this guy like this.
Wow.
And at this point in my career, he was bigger, faster than me and everything. So I was like, man, this guy could kill you.
Right.
I mean, he could literally run you down and kill you. You know, it may be time for you to think about doing something else, you know. And that was the first time. And after that, man, it becomes very difficult to go at the practices as hard when you're thinking, man, I'm trying to get out of here. So let me make sure that everything is good, you know.
Sean Taylor, what a freak he was, right?
I mean, my God, unbelievable.
Obviously a tragedy, but just the what if will always be there. But, man, what a player he was.
Yeah.
It's, you see it with even though his time was so short, really, in the big scheme of things, the way he still looked back upon by literally everybody, I think, just speaks volumes to
he was a beast, man. I mean, he probably couldn't play in the days of football because he was a headhunter, he was a killer, but this guy was quite the athlete, man. No doubt about it.
You know, we cover the Cowboys very well. Amari Cooper goes from the Raiders, goes to the Cowboys. I remember when Amari Cooper was drafted, you said that's a young Tim Brown right there. Mm-hmm. What do you see from Amari Cooper right now with the Cowboys and what he was able to do?
Well, I tell you, man, you know, I think the trade to the Cowboys really woke him up. You know, I think he was coasting out in California. He was, you know, have a game here, not so much the next 2 weeks. But I think getting traded made him realize he's he's expendable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a chance that if you got traded from one team, you get traded from another team. You know what I mean? And right. Then what's going to happen with your career? And I think it woke him up. And I think he even said that in an interview that, you know, he didn't have the passion for the game out in California. But now he understands that he has to, you know, take that passion to the next level. And I think that's what he's done with the talent that he has with passion, man. I mean, he can be one of the best in the league for years and years to come. I just hope and pray that he can, you know, keep that thing going on a week-to-week basis, you know.
What made you have that passion and that fire and that burn to be the best? Bill Romanowski told us the other day that he always knew that Tim Brown was on the field. You know what I mean? It was You always know. The great wide receivers always will let you know they're on the field without even being disruptive about it.
I mean, you know, I think for me, you know, I think there were some people that I felt like, even with the Raiders, didn't believe in me. Even me and Al Davis, we had some issues early on. So a lot of things that got me going were, in regards to him. You know, mm-hmm. if I could, you know, if I thought about some of the conversation we just had, you know, I'm going to show him. Right. There were times, and people never picked up on this, so crazy. But maybe people did, and I just did a good job going, what are you guys talking about? But every time I was scoring the Raiders in the end zone to the south, there was a big Al Davis side, and I would always slam the ball up against that
side. You sure did.
And people, you know, initially, Tim, was there any reason? I just happened to be in that corner. I'm just trying to, right. You know, but there was some meaning behind what I was doing, you know, throwing that ball at the at that sign. But so, you know, I think for me, you know, when I look back on that, and I had a chance when I went into the College Football Hall of Fame a couple of years ago to really reflect on this, Mark Davis was actually there. So I was really, and I said this on the stage, and I'm really talking to one guy here. And I said that probably the best thing that Al Davis ever did was not to embrace me. And the fact that he didn't embrace me kept me driving up that hill. And if at any point he would have leveled off, or if he would have, oh, Tim, you my guy, I think I may have leveled off. But the fact that till the last day I was there, was always like, he's just a guy.
Right.
You know what I mean? It kept me, you know, just driving, man, trying to be the best I could possibly be. So
it's obviously been kind of a hectic time period for Raiders fans. The move to Vegas, still don't know where they're playing next year. You trade away Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper, and then you have to turn around and hear about it throughout a bad season while you do this rebuild. Your thoughts on the direction they're headed with Gruden, and obviously the move's a big part of the equation as well, because I know he's a Bay Area guy. That's why he's a Raiders guy through and through, and it hurts his heart to see them leaving that area.
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants to see that happen, but I think if you're a real Raider fan, and this is what I've said to Raider Nation, you want to see the team in the best position they can be in. And the fact is that if it was up to the Raiders, they would be in Oakland. But they can't build themselves a stadium, unfortunately. They don't have that kind of – so the city has to have some part in this, but – the city has refused to participate. We got there in 95. 95, the city said, we're going to build a stadium. I mean, it was 2017 when this decision was made. 22 years they had, and we were no closer then than we were when we first got there. So, and from that standpoint, there's a little bit of the city not being as genuine as they probably could have been with what their intentions were. So it just makes it, you know, makes it tough from that standpoint that why would the city of Oakland allow us to do anything other than be here, you know? But and all of a sudden this Vegas thing comes up. I mean, no, initially everybody was like, you know, because I was like, what are you guys doing? You know, come on, man. You got to stay in Oakland. You know, you can't. And, you know, it's like, these guys won't be able to handle Las Vegas. Like, Tim, the guys who are going to go crazy are the guys who go crazy now. They go crazy in Oakland. You know, they can go to Vegas every night if they want to and be back for practice in the morning. We don't know what they're doing. So we'll be far enough away from the stuff that they won't be able to go there, you know, every night. But guys are going to go, absolutely. But it's a part of it. So, but at the same time, you know, I think the excitement, the stadium, the L.A. fans are coming back into play now because they're going to be a little closer. I just think it's going to be a remarkable thing, man. You know, you're going to have a lot of teams, you know, fans coming in on Thursday night. Baby, I got to go. My team, you know. You know, I'm just going to get everything set up. You know, yeah. I mean, it's going to be a lot of that. You know, but I think Raider Nation is going to show up, man, and they're going to enjoy the brand of football they're going to get. Is it unfortunate? It is, no doubt about it. But at the same time, I think it's going to be a great new era for the Raiders.
John Gruden has 3 first-round draft picks. He has Mike Mayock in the house with him now. Mm-hmm. Do you
gotta
see?
Make it happen.
I've been saying that this is the most important draft in Raiders history.
No doubt about it. Well, no doubt about it. Especially since we've been, you know, watching the Raiders,
right?
And you probably were watching them before I even got there, but. You know, I think, man, that because of Khalil being such a great player and Amari doing what he did with the Cowboys for those last 9 or 10 games, they're under a little pressure, no doubt about it. I think more pressure than probably they thought when they made those trades. But at the same time, I know this guy to be a great football guy. And if you look at what he was doing from the offense standpoint, they were actually playing pretty good offensive football. I mean, they were controlling. They had 7-8 minute drives and things of that nature. That's exactly what they want to do: put you in a position where you feel as if you have to score on the opposite side offense. So, but then they ran out of players.
Right,
guys started to get hurt. They got rid of Amari. So now you don't have guys to be able to function like that. So when people are saying Gruden's offense or whatever. No, his offense is cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's different, and people are going to have to adjust to it. But I think from a has he lost touch? I don't think so. I think he knows exactly what he's going to do. And now you got to get some players. You got to hit on those players, you know. And that's, you know, that's a 50-50 deal. Even if a first round pick, you're not 100% sure that guy is going to be the guy. And it's going to be very interesting to see if they can do that.
Is the quarterback the guy, in your opinion?
I think he can be the guy for sure.
Okay.
But in this offense, he has to understand you've got to run. You've got to take off. They can't play you man-to-man coverage every time.
Mm-hmm.
They can't play you two-man when they take all the safeties out, and they can't do you like that. I mean, you have to predetermine sometimes if you see that coverage. Oh, they're going to play that coverage? Well, I'm going to run right up the middle of the field and get 15 yards because nobody's going to be there. And once you do that, now you start to dictate their defense, and it makes everything easier for you. So Rich Gannon was the king of that, man. I mean, there were plays, man. I get to the line of scrimmage, and I look at the defense. I'm like, well, let me just clear out because I know Rich Gannon is coming right up my butt, you know, because he ain't thinking about throwing this ball. And it became a quarterback draw, you know. But I think he has to run with the ball. I think if he does that, it'll make his overall offense, overall game a lot better.
I think everybody would agree that you'd fit in any offense just about. But when you see some of these more up-tempo, high-flying types of offenses, obviously the Big 12 quarterbacks have suddenly become a thing. Mm-hmm. Do you ever envision how you would have you know, put up some stats in those types of offenses or how you would have fit in?
You know, the thing that I don't like and the thing that I don't think I would have liked is the no-huddle, game. I mean, I always relish that 40 seconds, you know, being able to come back and catch your breath and do that. I think if I was in that no-huddle offense, I would have been out the game more. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was able to play 90-95% of the snaps, you know, for 15-16 years with the Raiders because, you know, you walk back to the huddle, you talk to the line of scrimmage, and you get ready for the next play. Going, you know, trying to get in 70 plays a game, you know, that meant that I would have probably been out 20-25 plays a game. So, to me, it would have thrown off your rhythm. So who knows? I mean, who knows how it may have affected me in a negative way. You know, you never know. So.
Would you have liked to catch passes from Patrick Mahomes? Just seeing what he did this year as a first-year starter.
Man, I tell you, that would have been crazy, man. You know, I mean, to have a guy like that talented, so young, so full of confidence, man. You know, the sky's the limit for him. He's probably going to be the NFL MVP this year. You know. So it's unbelievable, you know, for a kid to come in, has his first year, and to play so well. But, remarkable. Unfortunately for the Raiders, we're going to have to see him for many years to come.
That's our conversation every time.
It's, since he's been drafted, that was our conversation.
It's like, hey, he's really great, but unfortunately, Q, you have to watch him for like the next 10 years.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Twice a year.
Right, twice a year.
Yeah.
Deal with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a very select group when it comes to those who have won a Heisman Trophy, been in the College Football Hall of Fame, which is right next door to us, by the way, and also a Pro Football Hall of Famer, and you're one of those guys. And you're here with H2H. Tell us about that and what you're up to with H2H.
Yeah, we H2H is not officially a thing yet. We're just trying to see if it can be a thing. But when I went into the Hall of Fame, I had one of my business associates in Dallas who tell me, you know, I looked it up, and he's a country guy. I looked it up, and you're only one of eight guys to win the Heisman and go in the Hall of Fame. And I was like, Lee, that can't be right. That can't be right. And we looked it up. It was a case. So you know, we've gotten together over the last couple of years and pretty much tried to say, I mean, what can we do? We've left an incredible legacy on the football field. Can we take this now, borrow it up, brand it, and go and help people and go and, you know, and have leave a legacy off the football field? So we want to get together, man, do some philanthropic things around the country, see what companies we can help, see what nonprofits we can help, and just leave a different kind of legacy. We've done what we can do on the football field.
Right.
Let's see what we can do off the field. And you know, to get these group of guys together is a remarkable thing, because, you know, I mean, sometimes you can have some attitudes in there, but I think everybody has a common goal of, if we're here to help, you know, help people, then I'm in. Not to raise, you know, money grabs and all that kind of stuff. But if we're here to try to help people, let's try and make it happen.
That philanthropy thing, it just kind of seems like that's kind of the direction that a lot of guys are deciding to go now, their life after football. And it's just such a good avenue to go down.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think guys are coming out to the league now with so much money in their pockets, and they realize that they don't have to go to work. They can really go out and do some incredible things in the community. So, so I think from that standpoint, man, you know, when you have the guys who have these high accolades behind their names, you know, hopefully that'll be enough to be able to knock down some doors and be able to do some great things.
I want to pass this 100-year history of pro football and the 150-year history of college football. I mentioned there's a very select group who's won the Heisman and is in both of those Hall of Fames. 9 players, as a matter of fact.
Right.
Tim Brown is the only wide receiver to accomplish that feat. Roger Staubach, the only quarterback. And then the other names, oh, you're just talking the Tyler Rose, Earl Campbell. You're talking Barry Sanders, Tony Dorsett, Marcus Allen, Paul Hornung, Doak Walker.
It's an elite group.
That is an elite group. Is there anybody elite out there at the wide receiver spot that you enjoy watching these days?
Oh, man. You know, I'm a Julio Jones guy.
Okay.
I mean, I can watch Julio. I mean, I think Julio is a guy that really does an incredible job. He's a route runner. Even though he's a big guy, he's a real route runner guy. He'll get inside in the slot and run routes there. So, you know, there are not a lot of route runners in the league, though. Not a lot of guys who can even the guys who are trying to run routes, you can tell they're having some difficulty. But I love to see, obviously, Beckham when he's healthy. He's a freak to watch him play, run routes and things of that nature. But I love to see guys who, you know, catch a 5-yarder and turn it into a 50-yarder. You know, those are the guys I love to watch, man. So this league has turned into a crazy league, right? You know, I mean, you guys like Antonio Brown and Smith-Schuster on the same team putting up incredible numbers. Like, I mean, you know, who would ever thought years ago that you have 2 1,200-yard receivers on one football team? It's really remarkable what's happened in the league. So,
great stuff right there. I hope you enjoyed that. Let me know your feedback, man. Let me know your thoughts. If you heard anything in there that you enjoyed, anything that you wanted to question, anything, just hit me up, 707-654-4693. Let me know about it. Again, that was Tim Brown. He was very gracious with his time, and it was awesome. So I thank him, and I hope you enjoyed that interview. Coming up in segment number 3, I got some more calls for the Locked On Raiders podcast voicemail line. We'll close out the week strong right here on the Locked On Raiders podcast.
You are Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Oakland Raiders, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, Raider Nation. This is the Locked On Raiders podcast, segment number 3 on this Friday, February 1st, 2019. About to close out the week strong, about to close out this segment really strong with some very good phone calls off that Locked On Raider podcast. Voicemail line 707-654-4693. Start things off with Joe in KC. He's calling to talk about who he wants as a starting quarterback going into 2019. That's right, who he wants as a starting quarterback. And also calling about the toughness of Derek Carr. It's the whole Bill Romanowski conversation that we've been talking about. And he actually has an explanation, or he feels like he has an understanding of what Bill was talking about. Here's Joe and KC.
Hey, what up, Q? This is Joe and KC. Just want to call in and, you know, kind of talk about some of the things that I heard on the show today. Well, just this week in general. First, I want to clarify, like, hey, I think going into next year, I want Derek Carr as our starting quarterback going into next season. He needs to prove himself. And if we do need to move on, I feel more comfortable selecting from the quarterbacks that will be coming out next year and next year's draft than any of the quarterbacks that are coming out this year. I don't think we need to jump the gun and just, you know, take somebody now for the sake of saying we need to upgrade when Carr still needs to have the opportunity to continue to prove himself with some legitimate weapons. The next thing I wanted to get on is what Bill Romanowski had mentioned regarding toughness. I think there should be some clarification on that. Physically, we know Derek Carr is tough. We've seen him, you know, break his fingers, ankle, his back, and, you know, try to play through it and all of that. We've seen that. So we know physically he is, you know, he's pretty tough. But what I think what he meant by Gruden maybe not agreeing with the way that how he carries himself as far as being tough is outside, off of the field, you know, the way he interacts with other players. You know, Rich Gannon, he'll get in your ass. Like, he's like, hey, man, you need to make sure you're doing this, you need to make sure you're doing that. So what Bill meant by toughness is just, like, the interaction with, like, Cooper. Like, when he talked about how, you know, Cooper initially didn't really care, maybe Derek Carr should have stepped in on that point and like, hey, I'm not throwing you the ball unless you do what you need to do, unless you come out here and act like you care. And not so much of the, you know, I love everybody. I love this guy. I love, you know, that the toughness that comes with holding people accountable. I think that's what he meant. And I will say personally, I do have a problem with that. I hate always hearing, you know, the jolly, jolly, you know, good, I love everybody kind of guy. That's, you know, you can't be like that in football. You got to hold people accountable. So when it comes to toughness, I felt like that's what he meant. All right, man. Raiders are out.
Interesting thoughts right there from Joe and KC. Maybe that was the way that Bill was trying to say that Derek Carr wasn't tough enough. And maybe not necessarily physically tough enough. Maybe it wasn't necessarily, you know, he doesn't take enough hits or whatever. Maybe it was a little bit of a twist to it like Joe was thinking right there. Good stuff right there from my man Joe and KC. Now, David in Fresno, representing the 559, he's a first-time caller. He's speaking on the whole Romanowski comments as far as toughness. He breaks it down on why he feels Carr is tough. It's a really good call here from David. He's a new booty, man. It's in the 559, representing one time. What's up, man?
Hey, Q. This is David from Fresno. I listen to your podcast quite often. Enjoy it. Listen to it all the time, actually. But I just felt compelled to call in. I've never called in before. But after listening to Romanowski talk about how Carr needs to be tough or Gruden's looking for a tough quarterback, I just don't get it. I mean, I just don't get it. I want to talk about Carr's toughness a little bit. I don't think Raider fans really understand what we have in Carr. In 2016, I don't know if you remember this, but he ran around all over the place. Remember he did a flip in New Orleans in the opener? Everybody loved him. He's running all over the place. And they say, you can't do that as much. You need to stay in the pocket. You're getting hurt. He was told not to run around so much. And I don't know if you remember this that year, but he broke his pinky, played, couldn't take a snap from center, kept playing, broke his leg, and he was mic'd when he broke his leg. He wasn't crying. He wasn't whining. He just, it's broke. I don't get where Romanowski talks about how he's not tough. Last year, he played with 3 broken bones in his back. 3 broken bones in his back, and he played. This year, he's getting sacked like crazy. He has no offensive line. He has no weapons to throw to. Jared Cook is literally the only weapon. Maybe Jalen Richard once in a while. He's running around for his life. I don't really know what Romanowski expects from him. If for me, we're talking about mental toughness. Well, mental toughness, if you think about Derek Carr, He has more fourth quarter comebacks in his first 5 years in the NFL in the history of the NFL, more than any other quarterback in the history of the NFL in the first 5 years. I'd say you have to be pretty mentally tough to be able to do that. And this is what I don't get, too. They talk about how, like on First Take, and I've heard other people talk about how the Raiders didn't quit this year. That was one good positive from Gruden. The Raiders didn't quit. Well, Derek Carr didn't quit either. In fact, he's the one in the huddle. He's the one getting the guys fired up. He's the leader of the team. He didn't quit. He's the one who led those fourth quarter comebacks. He's the one who led the comeback against the Steelers, the Browns. I mean, he did not quit. He's a leader. The players love him. So I don't see where he's not physically tough, and I don't see where he's not mentally tough. Maybe you can talk about some of his throws. I mean, there's a throw on fourth down against San Diego that I cannot defend. I think we all know which one we're talking about. But all quarterbacks have a bad throw, a bad play here and there. You can talk about that, but I just don't see where people get off talking about how he's not tough.
David, appreciate you chiming in, my man. That was good stuff right there. And, you know, another interpretation of what Bill Romanowski was talking about. He really got under some folks' feathers and ruffled some folks' feathers a little bit. But either way, I guess that's what Bill Romanowski does. So, David, thank you again for that call. Now, Smith Rader, he's in the ATL. He's where I'm at right now. But I'm actually just visiting. This is where he stays. He's calling because he had a change of heart as far as the draft goes. What the Raiders need to do to build this team up. Also, he's going to speak on something he feels Derek Carr needs to work on in 2019. Here's Smith Rader in the ATL.
Hey, what's up, Q? Smith Rader here. Hope you're enjoying your time in Atlanta. It's a really cool city. It's not my favorite, but it is home. I love it, so I hope you're enjoying yourself. Anyways, I had a change of heart today when I was just thinking, and I kind of wanted to run it across you and across Raider Nation regarding our draft. So with the fourth pick in the draft, or at least our first pick, quarterback is the biggest necessity for any NFL team, and we have a good quarterback. So I think our mentality needs to be the same one we did last year, man, and protect our quarterback and draft an offensive lineman with our first pick. We could even maybe trade back to like 8 or something like that and still get the best lineman in the draft. Because if you look at it, starting left to right, like Colton Miller played hurt all year, I understand, but he had a horrible rookie season. And, I mean, there's a question mark there. I mean, he could still be really good, but we don't know that. We haven't seen him do that. So Colton Miller's a question mark, unfortunately. At left guard, we all know pretty much that Osemele's not going to make it to Vegas. So you got to do something there eventually. We're good at center. We're good at right guard. But then right tackle, too, is a big need. I'm not going to count on Donald Penn being there, and I'm not going to count on Brandon Parker or anyone else on the line. So I really think we need to draft a tackle, specifically a right tackle, or if not, maybe a left guard. Or if there's a really good left tackle, we could get one of those and move Colton over to the right side. I don't know, but I really just want Derek Carr to be protected because you saw it. We all saw it all year. Anytime a defender got behind Carr, it was like a 65% chance that he was going to fumble the ball. And it sucks. That's like my only knock on Derek is when someone comes up from behind him, I don't know why he just fumbles it every time. So I hope so. Something he needs to work on in the offseason, I hope he specifically works on that. Because anytime someone gets behind him, dude, I immediately stand up and put my hands over my face and I watch the play through the cracks in my fingers. Like, that's how bad it is. It's cringeworthy. And I really just think we need to protect him. With the next three picks, I think they all need to be defense, go linebacker, safety. And then with that, the second pick in the second round, I think, man, I really like what I saw out of Hunter Renfrow at those Senior Bowl practices. He's a small receiver, but he has really good hands and really good footwork. And he just looks, he's like reliable pretty much. And, so Hunter Renfrow is the receiver I want. I think we can get him maybe even in the third round. But anyways, Q, enjoy your stay in Atlanta. Peace Peace out, Raider Nation.
Appreciate you, my man, Smith Raider in the ATL. He actually hit me up and said he got on Twitter. You know, he finally was inspired to get on Twitter. And Twitter is a cool place. It's a fun place, but also it's a crazy place. So, Smith Raider, I appreciate that, man. And it's been fun hanging out in the ATL. I got a couple more days. I'll be here through Tuesday. So, should be a lot of fun. And this weekend, definitely going to get loose a little bit once I can say, all right, I'm not officially working. So, basically, that means Saturday. But either way, I'll enjoy it. Smith Raider, definitely appreciate that. Now, closing out the calls, closing out the segment, closing out the show for the week with Nico in North Jersey. He's calling to answer the question about three realistic free agents you'd like to see the Raiders grab. This is from Brother Marquise. He threw this question out a few days ago on the podcast. So, again, Nico in North Jersey, he's going to take us home.
Yo, Q, Raider Nation, it's your boy Nico from North Jersey. I'm just calling in. I am going to answer Marquise's question again about, you know, the three free agents from offense and defense that are reasonable with, you know, maybe one or two kind of high ticket items. Let's start on defense because that's obviously the most important for our team right now. Glaring need, edge rusher. I think that's where we got to go big ticket here. I am really torn between Dee Ford and Frank Clark. I will be really happy if we get either. But let's say, you know, let's use this logic. Let's take Dee Ford because let's take him away from the Chiefs. So we're helping ourselves and we're worsening an opponent, a rival, a division rival. So let's take Dee Ford as a big ticket item, edge rusher. That's our biggest need. Let's then add a middle linebacker is inside linebacker. That's our another glaring need for us, so we got to snag one of them. I'm thinking Quan Alexander. This dude just got injured to the Bucs. He's young. He's fast. He's tenacious. The guy's all over the field. I think that would be a really, really good upgrade, and he's young, so that's awesome. I mean, I would say mostly, but that's another big ticket item. So let's drop a tier with Quan Alexander. I think it could be really helpful too. And then I think safety is a huge need for us. I don't want to see Gilchrist on the field anymore. So let's go with Clinton Dix. Again, I think he's a tier two guy. With, you know, the Earl Thomases out there and the Matthews and the Landon Collins, I think he's a tier two. So that's not a big ticket item for us. So I got Dee Ford, I got Quan Alexander, and I got Clinton Dix for defense. Now moving to the offense. I think it is very, very important that if we believe we need an upgrade on the line, we must go at it through free agency. I do not want to be drafting a left tackle, right tackle, inside in the draft, especially with one of our first four picks. So let's say like a Trent Brown from the Pats. You know, he's a tackle that can play right away. I think that would be a big upgrade. Again, I don't really know too many, but I know Trent Brown's one of them. He's pretty good. So I think that would be very, very good for our line. That would bring Brandon Parker to depth, which is what he needs. I know we might have, we might be re-signing Donald Penn, to step right in for the right tackle to give Brandon Parker some depth. So I think adding another one just, again, ensures the depth and improves the line. Also, re-signing Jared Cook, that is imperative for Derek Carr. The chemistry they have is really, really good. He's a huge weapon for us. And then the third thing, on offense, I think we got to go receiver. I'm between the big body, deep threat, Tyrell Williams from the Chargers. He's a big body for Derek Carr. I know Derek's good with big bodies. Or I'm thinking of the slot with Humphreys or Cole Beasley. So I think we got to go one of those routes. If we're going to go Tyrell Williams, then I think that our receiver aim in the draft is to go with one of the smaller, shiftier guys like the Marquise Browns or the Isabella or the Hearts. I think if we go Cole Beasley or Humphreys, then we got to go one of the big bodies in the draft like N'Keal Harry, Hakeem Butler, Metcalf. So I'd be really happy if we went either of those directions, but we need to address big body, little body. Big body on the outside, little slot in both the free agency and the draft. And back to defense, we must get a edge rusher or two, and we must get an inside linebacker. If we do not get a big-name inside linebacker, we have to then get one in the draft, whether it's Devin White Devin Bush or Mac Wilson. Has to happen. Has to happen. I think edge and inside linebacker are our two biggest needs, and we must improve. IQ.
Good stuff, good stuff. Appreciate that, Nico. A very detailed call right there. Nico in North Jersey, Smith Raider in the ATL, David in the 559, repping Fresno. Joe in KC, Raider Jim in the Pacific Northwest, Brother Marquise 305, repping Miami one time, and Kurt from Northern Cali. Definitely appreciate all those calls on the Locked On Raider podcast. Voicemail line, appreciate Tim Brown for being on the Locked On Raiders podcast today, and appreciate anyone who takes a couple seconds out of their day to listen to the podcast and even give some feedback, either through Twitter, at your boy Q2. 254, or like I mentioned before, on the Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line, 707-654-4693. Until, I believe, Monday, Tuesday, beginning of next week, maybe a little shaky. The Super Bowl doesn't get started till late on Sunday, and who knows? But until we talk again, as always, Raider Nation, just win, baby.